Let's do this thing. All right, so this is testing and debugging Microsoft SharePoint applications with Microsoft Visual Studio 2012. And Brian Randall and me. So we're going to do the handoff thing. So who are these guys?
Benjamin is a Libra rising out of the sun. I don't know.
Who gets up at 5 a.m. and goes to sleep at 8.
Now, Ben is an ALM MVP, a consultant, coach, and trainer. You're a big fan of Scrum, right? Tomorrow you're doing a talk on Scrum under a waterfall.
Scrum under waterfall, yeah. A lot of TFS.
You can actually hire him to come in person and torment you and teach you Scrum, or you can watch him on videos at pluralsight.com.
Yep.
Or you can just read his blog or send him a harassing email. It's really easy because it's benday at benday.com.
And then you got my Twitter account there, which is at benday, has always been kind of fun in the past because I, you know, get up in front of audiences and I'll say, go ahead, heckle me live on stage. And actually, a couple years ago, I did that and somebody came up to me afterwards like, you will not believe what I wrote. And he wrote some of the worst stuff you've ever seen in your life. It was like, dude, that is a public forum. Anyway.
Nice guy.
Brian Randall, right here. Partner with MCW Technologies, he is also an MVP, a Microsoft MVP. We're both ALM MVPs, which means that we teach people to eat their vegetables all day long.
Unfortunately.
We're fun. I forget when your birthday is. You are a?
So I am a Virgo on the cusp of Libra. It's a weird kind of thing.
Cool.
Right in the middle of September.
All right. He also has stuff on Pluralsight. He's been a trainer for them, recording courses as we speak.
Yeah, I'm finishing Team Foundation Service course. The problem is they keep changing the product every 3 weeks, so it's really hard.
Don't worry about it. Shouldn't be a problem. All right, email at Brian Randall, and then we've got the
Twitter
up there.
Yep.
There you go.
All right, so what are we going to talk about?
Well, here's the mission. Mission is we're going to show you the testing and debugging features of Visual Studio 2012, apply those features against SharePoint code, and importantly enough, I think we're going to talk a lot about why you should actually care. So this is a problem when you talk about testing stuff. How many of you are developers? Right. Do you care about testing? No. You should. So we're going to try to talk about why you care because we're ALM MVPs and we...
This is what we do. I mean, true story. I did a talk on Visual Studio in 2006 in Boston, of all places.
Okay. That's where I met you, actually.
Yeah. And the funny thing about it was I started off on unit testing and I literally got 200 or 300 people out of like 1,000 people who left because they're developers. Thankfully, we have moved forward since 2006, and the word test does not freak developers out. It's not necessarily a bad word.
Right.
And that's what we hope to show you here. But really, you are test, I'm debug, and we're going to kind of have some fun with that.
Yeah. Okay, so finally, we're going to wrap up with debugging stuff. We're going to do that all the way along. But testing features I'm going to talk about are going to be testing the guts of your application with unit tests in the VS Fakes framework. I almost always call it the VS Fakes framework. It's my Star Trek background. And then we're going to test some, test a user interface using Coded UI. And then we're going to find some performance problems in an application. We're going to check our SharePoint, make sure it's running fast using load tests. And then, on the other side...
IntelliTrace.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of wonderful goodness there if you use it the right way, and hopefully we will.
There you go. All right, so what's a unit test? Let's think about that first. So it's a code-based check to make sure that your code actually works. So you're going to write a little bit of code over here, test code in your application, verifies that it's actually working. So those little tiny chunks of run this, check it, those little chunks are called unit tests. Take a whole bunch of those chunks, that turns into a unit test suite. Now, how many of you are doing unit testing right now? That's about what I thought.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the whole broccoli thing.
I don't know. I like broccoli.
I do like broccoli, too.
You ever roast it?
I'm sorry?
You ever roast broccoli?
No.
It's good.
Parmesan cheese, by the way, on top. It's really tasty.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Should we talk about SharePoint testing?
I'm sorry. Go right ahead.
Okay.
I apologize.
All right. So the big thing about that automated test suite is that it's automated. Keyword, automated. So what you do, you run it. It runs all your tests really, really fast. Tells you if your app works or doesn't work. So those tests should be running really, really quickly. So if they're just sort of going... 30 seconds, 30 seconds, 30 seconds, 30 seconds. That's a pain. You're not going to do it. It's running too slow. They should go zoom, run 1,000 or so in a 20-second period. So those tests, when you run them, should not get in your way. Okay? You want to just make sure that it's not a problem to write those unit tests. So for those of you that said you don't write unit tests, I'm guessing a lot of it is like, yeah, we know we should write unit tests, but it's a pain in the butt, so we're just not going to do it. Okay? It's because it's, well, sometimes it can be a little bit hard. Writing the test gets in your way. So one of the things that I'm really interested in solving is making sure that you have no excuses to not do unit testing. So in that automated test suite, if you've got 1,000 unit tests in there, if something starts to fail, something shows up as red, that's an indication that your app is broken. So what's really interesting is when you have that, you know, let's say 1,000 tests that you've written over a couple of years, if you're working on something right here, you're refactoring some code, and you're like, yep, this works great, passes a test. But then when you run the whole suite, something bombs. How many of you think you should check that code in? How many think you should not check that code in? There you go. And for the rest of you, how many were not paying attention? All right. So another way of thinking about this is that unit tests are automated debugging. So arrange, act, assert, right, Brian? So you do sort of set up what you're going to do in your test. You're going to actually do the exercise of logic, and then you're going to check it afterwards with assert statements. So thinking about what you do if you're like debugging your application without automated tests, F11, right? Set some breakpoints, F11, try to find where something breaks. Okay? So you're looking for that moment where the bug actually shows itself. Well, those assert statements kind of do the same thing, except they do it a lot faster than F11, F11, F11. So that makes your debugging an awful lot faster. So you have an automated test suite that tells you if the thing is working end-to-end, and then also it helps you debug things when things are not working very well. Now, I know Brian, and I know he's thinking, so what does that have to do with an airplane bathroom? Was that exactly what you were thinking?
That's what I was thinking.
Okay, cool. So how would you test this? How many of you flew down here? Okay, almost all of you. Anyone go to the bathroom? Yeah, I did. So on that door, on the airplane bathroom, you've got the little lock thingy right there. So if you're Boeing and you're, you know, you got to test that along with everything else, the right way to test this is to get in that plane, they take it up to 40,000 feet, wiggle the door lock, and land the plane. Sounds about right, right? How many of you think that that's a really efficient use of your time? No. How many of you think that they do that? Right. They're not going to do that at all. They have figured out a different way. They have designed the plane for testability. Now, you're going to do the same thing when you're writing unit tests against your SharePoint app or against anything else. Because anything that gets in the way of doing your test, anything that makes it hard to test, causes something called testing friction. That testing friction is what developers are basically railing against when they say, we don't want to write tests. Okay? The tests are actually going to help you out. Now, in the SharePoint world, just as in the regular Visual Studio world, the Microsoft Fakes framework is really going to help you to get rid of a lot of friction. So, what it lets you do is unit test things in isolation. So remember, we call it unit tests. Unit tests are testing small units of functionality, not grand pieces of functionality. And you're going to use something called lambdas and delegates. So how many of you are familiar with lambdas and delegates? All right, that's just about all of you. So you're going to be able to hook that into the Microsoft Fakes framework to throw in fake implementations of different things. So you're going to use shims and stubs. Shims do something called type replacement. So you can replace whole classes or replace implementations of methods. Like one of the demos I've seen is replacing the implementations on various methods on system.dateTime. So you can replace that with something that you write using a delegate or a lambda expression. And then you have stubs, and stubs help you save a lot of typing and help you inject crazy stuff into your application so you can test it better. What do you think? Should we do some demos?
I think we need to show them something.
All right.
So we will use your machine.
Okay.
And we'll put it on 8. And there it is.
There we go.
So one of the things we're going to do here is I'm going to be the code monkey, and he's going to tell me what to do, and hopefully you'll be able to follow along with what we're doing.
See what happens. All right, so you can all see his stuff. Let's go into, let's just open up that solution right there. Got a little pre-baked.
Appointments web part?
Appointments web part, you got it.
It's a beautiful thing.
It is nice.
So using Ultimate Edition?
Yes.
So what do I need if I want to use the fakes?
You need Premium.
Premium, okay. Ooh, I like, you wrote all the code. This is awesome.
I know, just double click on unittest1.cs. Okay, actually, you know what we're going to do? We're going to right-click on the web part up at the top.
Appointments web part?
Yep, and you're going to do deploy.
Ooh.
So we're going to push this code up into SharePoint. We're going to do it a little bit backwards.
Awesome sauce.
Yeah. And then when that's done, we're going to hit F5.
Really?
Or actually, no, we're not. I'm lying. We're going to bring up a browser and go to the SharePoint site.
Okay. Show me the way home.
All right. http://vsalm/site/team. And it's fast. We were thinking about dancing every single time that the application is slow. How annoying is that going to be after like another, I don't know, we've got 63 minutes and 59 seconds.
Right, moving right along.
All right, so we are going to go and add a web part into our application. So hit that little edit button right there.
You want me to edit the home page?
Yep.
Awesome.
It's going to be good.
I just love it.
Yeah,
you want to insert a web part?
Yep. So click somewhere between shared documents and that paragraph.
Like right there?
Perfect.
Would that make you happy?
Yep. Hit web part.
Okay. And this is a custom web part.
It is so in custom.
It's the appointment web part.
It is that guy.
All right.
And let's add that in there.
Loading.
Save and close.
Oh, that's a beautiful thing.
That's right.
I know that.
All right. Okay.
I have used SharePoint. I didn't say I can write SharePoint code.
Whatever.
I admitted that this morning. Go ahead.
Okay. You ready to go, fussy man? All right, so we need to set this up. So this is going to use a list behind the scenes. So click on list. We're going to go create a list. All right, new list or create.
You want me to create?
Yep.
Absolutely. Love to.
Is it running?
Yeah, it was the old mouse click.
Okay. All right, it's going to be using appointments and then call it appointments.
You are creative.
Yeah, it's good. Hit create. And now let's just go fill it out. So actually, we'll go back to the home page.
You want me to go home?
Yep. Hit browse.
Ah, I gotta go home.
I know. I thought you were good at this, Brian. What's up?
No, the URL just was too long. It scared me.
Okay. All right. So it's a fairly simple web part that has first name, email, phone, age. I don't know why age is in there. And then corp ID, and it asks you to book an appointment date. So this is not like the most exciting thing in the universe, but where it gets kind of cool is, or where it starts to get more complicated, is we've got that corp ID and the validate corp ID button. So how many of your bosses are insane? Okay.
Wait. How many are with your boss right now? Anybody?
All right. Okay. You are not being videotaped. We are. So how many of your bosses are insane? Okay. Most of the people that I have met over time have insane bosses. So let's say that they started off with this web part right here, and they're like, you know what? There are too many people that are like scheduling these things and not typing in their corp ID. Like, okay, sure. So we want to make sure we validate it. So go ahead and like go back there and just hit validate. That's all our bosses want us to do, is we want it to be able to show the it's good before we actually do an appointment.
Oh, how pretty.
It's kind of dumb, but. And then why don't you pick a date and then hit submit.
Oh, I'm feeling like, 2012 is a good year.
Sure. You're going to go all the way that far?
Is there any validation?
Plan ahead.
All right, I created an appointment.
All right, cool. So then hit the appointments list and it should be there.
You are a coding monster.
Awesome, yes, okay. Now, at the moment, we don't really have too much in the way of tests. There's a little bit there, so let's close this window. Let's hop into the unit test code.
Okay.
So we've got two different unit tests that are in there right now. So first off, to create a unit test in Visual Studio, you create a class, and you decorate it with the test class attribute. Okay? Right there. And then the test methods are what the unit test framework are going to be looking for to actually execute your code, and that's going to be decorated with a test method attribute. So the class has to have a public constructor that doesn't take any arguments, and the methods return void and don't take any arguments either. So let's open one of those up. Let's open the first one. So you'll see something right in there called the SharePoint emulation scope. This is the start of what comes from Microsoft to help us break that testing friction when we're actually running SharePoint applications. So what this is going to do is this is going to get out of the way so that we don't have to spin up full SharePoint to do all kinds of stuff. So One of the places where this is really helpful is if you have a shared SharePoint instance that you're using on your team. So if you're going to run a whole bunch of unit tests at the same time and everyone's running the same test constantly, all against the same server, you're modifying data, adding stuff, deleting stuff, changing stuff around. What do you think the chances are you're going to have some concurrency problems on that? Or that your SharePoint instance is going to get loaded up with all kinds of crazy data that you're going to have to clean up later on? Okay? Or what about if what you really want to do is test your code? Like, say you get the crazy boss and they want you to test that is valid corp ID logic. That's what they really, really care about. That stuff doesn't really have to write into SharePoint to do it. That's your own code. So you want to test your own code, but you don't want to worry about SharePoint stuff. Before this emulation scope thing, you would have to set it up, deploy it into SharePoint, and do all that kind of stuff. Because SharePoint, that's kind of a beast as far as dependencies goes. So what we're doing here is we wrap this code inside of new SharePoint emulation scope. And then we've got the emulation mode set to enabled, which then the rest of that block of code is able to run. So we go and create a call into a site, create a SharePoint list, do some stuff in it. And then let's scroll down a little bit down to where it says act. So line 45. So we're going to do schedule appointment. Okay. So this is what we're actually testing. So remember, arrange our test, get ready to do it, act, actually do our test, and then assert it afterwards. So when we schedule our appointment, when we call that line at line 44, when it returns, by the time we get to line 50, it should say thumbs up. And then we clean up all our stuff. Now, scroll up to the top a little bit. If we run this with emulation mode set to enabled, it runs pretty much in memory. So at the end of that test, there's no test data hanging around. Okay? So we're not actually, that's weird. So we're not actually hitting the All right, thank you very much. It's that guy in the back. Everyone turn around and laugh and point at that guy. Okay. I lost my train of thought. What was I talking about, Brian?
You were talking about the fact that the emulation, and just let me be clear here, right? A lot of you will still, to be clear, as a developer, is going to have SharePoint installed locally. Because some of the things you do will just not be reasonable to do without. But the point is, every time you press F5 to go into SharePoint, you know it takes a little while, right? If you don't have an SSD and you don't have the latest, greatest processor, it sucks. So this is going to reduce a lot of the overhead and, as Ben said, the friction. And what he was getting at in this last part before the door went up was, emulation mode dot enabled means it's all going to run in memory, lightweight, fast, and friction-free.
Without that problem of your centralized server that you might have multiple people hitting at the same time. So why don't you bring up IntelliSense on emulation mode dot.
Oh, look at that.
So you got two different options there. One is enabled, the other one is pass-through. So enabled is going to run this in memory. It doesn't talk to SharePoint. If we hit it to pass-through, it's going to run it against real SharePoint. Okay, so sometimes you're going
to
want
to... Why is that good? I don't get that. That's confusing me.
Well, because SharePoint's kind of an integration test a lot of times. So sometimes you want to test your code, and you're like, okay, I'm happy to say, all right, I'm going to have full faith that Microsoft did a great job on these emulators, and I'm just going to run it in memory because I'm testing the stuff that I care about, the stuff that I wrote. Versus you flip that around, you're like, okay, but I want to double check. Let's run this against real SharePoint.
And maybe, as you said, integrate. So what we're doing is we're getting a little extra value here out of the unit test.
Yep.
Focus on what's supposed to do the unit, but then, oh, with a little magic, I get an integration test for free.
Right. So let's
go. That's money.
Let's add some more unit tests. So why don't you open up juliachild.cs?
And do you want me to leave that?
I would like that to be on Emulate.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I just want to make sure.
Thank you.
Okay, so emulation mode is enabled.
Yep.
And,
let's go to juliachild.cs.
Sweet. We love Julia.
All right. And copy all the code that is not commented out. So from line 29 all the way to the bottom.
Oh, you want to down here?
Yep. So remember we got that that code for is valid corp ID? Now, I used to work for a fairly large financial services company you've probably heard of. And their corp IDs were always starting with a letter and had six numbers afterwards. So what we've got is we've got a method in our web part. So once you paste that in and then...
You want to put it over back into unit test?
Let's go take a look at our web part code.
So web part?
Visual web parts. Expand that puppy.
Sorry, I double-clicked.
And then...
You want the CS file.
Yep.
All the way down here, that one.
Okay. And then let's go to... Just sort of gradually scroll through this. We've got a lot of code in here.
Gradually or slowly?
Just sort of gradually go through. We've got a lot of code in here. Some of it talks to SharePoint. But at some point we've got, let's go down a little more to is corp ID valid?
Validate corp ID click.
Yep, so that's the button click, and then below it is valid corp ID. So scroll down a little more so we can
there
see that
go.
Method.
Oh, look how pretty.
So we got a lot of code in there that we're writing that really doesn't know anything about SharePoint. So one of the things I'd do is I'd write unit test to go hit that thing. And that's kind of what we've done. So let's hop back over into unit test 1CS and scroll down to some of that stuff you pasted in.
I haven't pasted yet.
Oh,
I was waiting.
Go ahead and paste
Simon
it.
Says, just, you know, I'm a good boy. Good okay. Monkey.
All right. Does it still build?
I'm going to verify that because
okay.
That's a good thing.
Whew.
It built.
All right. Looks like it runs.
You're a
so
crazy monster.
We've got a whole bunch of different ones in here. So that go in, and let's look at line 163. So we new up a web part instance, and then we call into isCorpID valid and pass it a null. The return value for isCorpID valid should return false at that point. And we test a whole bunch of other variations on this. So we've got one, if you pass an empty string, that should be returning false. If you pass anything that's not right, returns false. Anything that's valid, thumbs up. So let's go ahead and run our unit test just to make sure everything still works.
Okay, so we can go up here. Go to
test.
All tests.
And this should bring up Test Explorer window in a second.
Yep.
It's a little fast. Should dance again. All right, here we go. We've got Test Explorer on the left.
There we go.
Runs a bunch
time.
Of our tests. And then we've got, what do we have? We have 10 tests. They all passed. So it ran really fast once it actually got loaded up. So what we're doing so far is we're just testing that method. And we're not using the emulators right now, but what if we need to hook that in so that when we do that create appointment, we've got an overload that will actually go and validate that corp ID. And if it isn't a valid corp ID, it's going to bomb. Now, we're basically making a call into code that we own. And we don't really care that it talks to SharePoint in the full version. We just want to make sure that our method behaves properly in the context of the other SharePoint code. So go to souffle.cs, pre-baked souffle, whatever. And let's copy these two test methods back over. And you're fancy with the regions and stuff.
It makes me happy.
Hmm.
You want this in the unit test?
Whatever works. Yeah, paste it in at the bottom. Now, let's see. At line 256, we've got the second to the last argument. We pass in A, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's our corp ID value. This is the method we are actually trying to test. Now, it requires SharePoint to actually be running. So, conveniently enough, if we scroll up a couple lines, we put it inside of a SharePoint emulation scope. So this basically wraps it so that we don't actually need to have full SharePoint running. And this runs really fast, and it doesn't actually write the disk. We don't have any cleanup issues. We don't have any problems with shared SharePoint and multiple developers. So if we build that, we'll go to the bottom.
And
let's run those two tests.
I am.
All right.
And
if it's working, it should go and pass just fine.
And there we go. 1 second. And booyah.
There you go.
Green, 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 green.
And green.
And green. Look at that.
All right, so what we're doing in those last two tests, like scroll a little bit further down, is we've got the assert at 262 that just asserts that the result comes back as success, and then the other one we do another flavor that passes in junk and make sure that it doesn't succeed. Okay? I think that's about it for this demo. Anything
feeling good about it?
Feeling pretty good.
All right. So let's go back to the slides. You saw the clicker?
You have the clicker right there.
Sweet. That was good. I like that.
Okay.
Now, the whole thing you may have noticed too on the unit test runner, right, is there's a little overhead in getting all that cruft going, but it's still running in milliseconds. Can you say the same thing if you just do a normal F5 into SharePoint? No. So you can save yourself a lot of pain and suffering. And remember, don't focus on the word test. Focus on the word that you're really helping yourself debug and find problems before you go to production.
Making sure your stuff works.
Now, unfortunately, you know, you don't always have Ben writing your code for you and giving you nice little snippets to cut and paste from, right? Anybody got someone who does that for you? God, it'd be great to have that.
Aren't they called QA people?
Well, that's when debugging comes in. And, you know, Visual Studio is a tour de force of debugging wonderness. Have you looked at the debugging tools lately?
I'm not going to show you these things, but I want you to go and take a look later at home and take a look at things because Ben hadn't.
Yeah.
if you look, his F11 key is a little worn out here because there's a lot more than just watch windows, breakpoints, and F11.
I'm not actually very good. I'm not talented.
You're not? No, no. Not at all. So the first thing is you can label breakpoints. This is really nice to logically group them together, particularly when you're working with a team and you're trying to find those gnarly problems. You can import and export, then share. Sharing's a good thing. You can have conditional breakpoints, which is one of my all-time favorites, because oftentimes it works great for that first execution. It's the second, third, and fourth that when you start having trouble, or you have to go through a loop operation, you have to run a query, et cetera. And you can set conditional breakpoints that look at data in memory and then make the decision based upon that data whether it should stop execution or not. Breakpoint hit counts. How many times did you get there, right? Sometimes you're reading 100 records and somehow the code only runs 99 times. That's not so good. Pinnable data tips. So data tips are those cool things you get when you hover over a variable in the text editor. You can actually pin those and save them, and then as you're running and debugging, they'll automatically update, so you don't have to keep hovering. Keep your hands on the keyboard. And you can import and export and share with people like Ben.
Yeah, sharing's good.
But then there's this 800-pound gorilla of debugging in Visual Studio 2012. It's called IntelliTrace. And actually, it's really IntelliTrace registered trademark. And there's something interesting about that. So, you know, Microsoft being a big company, you know, the basic rules of law is that if you don't protect your trademarks, if you don't protect your assets, someone can take them from you. And if you look at Visual Studio 2010, which was the first release that had IntelliTrace in it, this was the only feature that got registered trademark status. Right? So things like IntelliSense, IntelliTrace, those things that have Intelli, Microsoft goes to the trouble to trademark to protect it. Now, if they went to the trouble then to do all that, that means they probably think this is a compelling feature. And the good news, by being in 2012 and having all the enhancements we're going to talk about, this is a piece of technology that Microsoft's committed to. They've invested millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars developing this technology, and thus you can feel good that you're going to invest in and use it. It's not going to disappear in 2013, which is around the corner, believe it or not. Now, the reason we like IntelliTrace is because F11 can start to suck, right? You know, fundamentally, when you're building real applications, you're not building demoware, one of the things you run into is that it starts off great in the beginning. So that green field, you're feeling warm and fuzzy. And then you start getting code out there into production. And then you start getting bug reports. And the problem is, it's not as simple as, well, it happens here all the time. It happens occasionally when I create this invoice and I do a search for customers. And so to duplicate even what's going on, you have to start with the debugger, and you have to go through and try and do things, and then you hope that you got a breakpoint in the right place. Right? How many times have you decided, you know, I'll just step over that method, right? Go F10 instead of F11.
After and hitting then, F11 7,000 times already.
Exactly. And then, I missed it. It's in there. So then you go and you set more breakpoints. Right? And of course, you've got some architect who's decided that everything's going to be factored into 42 levels of, you know,
interfaces.
Subclasses and interfaces and dependency injection, just all this wonderful stuff, and it hurts.
It's my fault.
IntelliTrace is all about serving you, and it serves you two ways. These two ways are live debugging when you're writing code. And once again, you're starting from scratch. Yeah, the regular debugger F11 is going to be fine. But when you start debugging and building real code on real systems, then you have 10, 20, 30 DLL projects. This can be a lot of great stuff.
So it can be a lot of hunting around, right? So basically, if I'm sort of spitting it back at you, you've got a problem somewhere in your code. Your code is 10,000 lines long. You don't really know where it's at, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
And with this live debugging mechanism we get to use in Visual Studio, we also get something called historical debugging. This is TiVo for the execution stack. You'll be able to have a captured trace, whether it's in Visual Studio, whether it's done through Microsoft Test Manager, or yes, even in production. And you can go back in time and see how the code navigated through a call stack and look at data that was passed and popped on and off the stack. And when things like exceptions occur, you can see when and where it happened. So these are two things that IntelliTrace is going to give you. So it serves you these two core ways, and you have three different ways that you can get it. Debugging as a developer, testing with a tester, and ultimately production. And the cool thing is with SharePoint, you can do both. Both these features are available in 2012. Now, the way it works is IntelliTrace, when it's working with the debugger, is capturing state information. So as code is executing, they're monitoring through the .NET Framework's debug API. So the key statement here is this is for managed code, .NET 2.0 and higher. And what it's looking for is anything interesting that's happening. And what they've done is they've written special code in the IntelliTrace collectors that know how to monitor large chunks of the .NET Framework. The whole idea is to eliminate the no repro scenario, which is, hey, it runs on my machine, bug closed.
Done, let's go home.
Now, IntelliTrace has different levels. It's kind of like, you know, some of you look older, like, so Spinal Tap, you know? You can crank the dial to 11 and capture all the things you see on the screen, or you can
turn it up
to
F11, Brian?
Sad trombone. At the base level, you get what are called IntelliTrace events. The IntelliTrace team has looked at the core.NET framework, and as you're going to see, SharePoint, and they look for well-known classes, methods, things that people would care about, interesting events. The next level is crank them and say, you know what, I want you to track and trace the entire execution path. And if I am in the debugger, you also can will capture breakpoints. Also, you can use trace points. So the point is, you have this ability to say, take a snapshot here, take a snapshot here. Give me information. Now, when you do live debugging, you get events only or events and methods. And when we start looking at this as a developer, we're thinking, well, how am I going to do this? Well, the good news is you can use 2010 for live debugging and historical debugging from test. 2012 brings historical debugging to production and provides you with special support for SharePoint. Now, the way this works is you already had SharePoint support in 2010. So SharePoint 2010 with Visual Studio 2010. Some of the stuff I'm going to show you in Visual Studio will work. It's just much better in 2012. If you want to do 2013, however, you have to have Visual Studio 2012. If you want to do production against SharePoint 2010 or 2013, you have to have Visual Studio 2012. Okay? And the bottom line is the 2012 implementation, you know, and I understand budgets, I understand upgrading is hard, but for this feature, you really want to be on 2012, even just for regular IntelliTrace. It's much faster, and you'll understand that there is a performance hit when you use it. But it is much faster, it's much richer, and with Update 2, if you're targeting SharePoint, the IntelliTrace team has done a lot of work to really dig deep into the SharePoint libraries and pick up things like the ability to take a correlation ID, paste that into IntelliTrace, and find out where the problem occurred. How much, do we like looking up ELS logs in Excel and finding correlation IDs? Anybody? Bueller? Anybody? Didn't think so.
Is anyone actually paying attention to you right now? Raise your hand if you're not paying attention. Okay.
Smart dog.
I'm good.
All right, you want to press 8 on the bottom, and then you should
press
Mini DP for me. Okay.
That's my new nickname, Mini DP. Doesn't even make that makes no sense.
Can you do it? You ready to go?
I'm ready to go. Let's go.
All right.
What
so
am I doing?
What I have here is a SharePoint web part. Okay. I'm targeting SharePoint 2010, and if you expand. Render contents. What you'll see there is that I've got a nice try-catch block that loads up a customer, gets some data back, and then writes it out into the web part. Okay? Pretty straightforward. So do me a favor,
Okey-doke.
And just go ahead and right-click and deploy. And then go ahead and start Internet Explorer. And on the Favorites bar, the far right shortcut will take you to the team site.
Okay.
And once it loads up, you can dance like the dancing bear.
Yeah.
How's it coming? I realize that getting old is horrible for me.
Really?
Because I can't see. So you got to use Zoom it for me.
Wow.
I'm an old man.
Grandpa Randall out here.
All right.
Looking good, my man.
Do me a favor. Go ahead and go to the side actions menu.
Okay.
And create a new page. And call it Ben. Click Create. And go to Insert.
Where am I looking here? There you are. All right.
Okay. Web part. Custom.
And that guy?
Yep. And click Add. Go ahead and zoom in. Now, if you look at that, this is a good thing, right? We did not throw up all over the user with a correlation ID and everything, so we're happy about that. But there is a problem. Hey, hello, we're sorry, but things are bad. There's no data for this customer. Okay. Now, the problem is you're going to get the report back, and someone's going to say, yes, there is. There is data for that customer. So what are you going to do about it? Well, what we're going to do is we have to look at the code. So what I want you to do is go ahead and close Visual Studio.
Close Visual Studio?
No, sorry. Close the Internet Explorer. You did the fine thing.
Perfect. Yikes. Close Visual Studio and go to Notepad. Shouldn't be a problem at all.
There you go. Visual Notepad.
Now open up a Telnet window.
All right. Now, what I want to do is show you a couple things about IntelliTrace. So, Ben, all I want you to do is click the Start button.
Okay.
And when the home page comes up, go to Site Pages underneath Libraries on the left-hand side. Down, down, down.
Nope. Bad test.
Libraries, Site Pages.
Okay.
Click your page.
Monkey-doke.
Okay. Now, notice what happened. We didn't do any breakpoints, right? We didn't do anything. But what I want you to do is go back to Visual Studio.
Close IE.
You can leave IE running.
Okay.
And over on the right there, and why don't you zoom in first before you click it so people can see it. If you have Visual Studio 2012 Ultimate installed and you have the default settings, you have IntelliTrace turned on by default, but it's turned on at about 7. It's turned on to look for events only. And so what we're going to do here is we're going to say, well, what happened? Notice we didn't do any breakpoints, but IntelliTrace was monitoring what's going on because we were running with the debugger. So Ben's going to zoom out and click break all.
Okay.
And now he's going to zoom back in, and he's going to show you that, oh, there's a lot of stuff going on. It turns out that they are collecting lots of interesting stuff about ADO.NET, ASP.NET web calls, HTTP handlers, all sorts of yummy stuff. Zoom back out, and then go up under to the categories and click the drop-down.
Okay.
And you'll notice that there are a bunch of different categories that you can pick from. What I want you to do is uncheck all categories and then check exception.
Okay.
Because in general right now, we really care about that something bad possibly happened. Now that Ben zooms in, we can take a look here, and I wonder if there's anything good there. Look, there's no data for this customer. In fact, if you go to search and type customer, we can filter down even more. And now if you double click on the top one, notice it takes me right to where the exception occurred. That's sweet. Okay? Now if you take a look at this, well, what is the big deal, right? There's an exception, you found it. Okay, that's cool. But how did we get there? Because often the problem is some bad data got passed in here. Now this is demo code, so there's nothing interesting here, right? I threw the exception on purpose. But a lot of times you get bad data in, and then when you try and go find the customer, you can't locate it. So go ahead and F5 twice to get going again. And then go back to Internet Explorer and shut it down. And now we're going to turn the knob up to 11. Go to Quick Launch. I love Quick Launch. Up in the upper corner.
Upper right. Where am I looking?
Up higher. And type IntelliTrace. And then go down to the options.
Okay. This one?
Up. Open IntelliTrace settings. There you go. One more.
Am I a bad person? Ryan, help me.
It's okay. Right here.
I'm not a reader, exactly.
Right here. And if you zoom in on the screen a little for them, you'll notice that right now it's set to capture IntelliTrace events only. What we're going to do is say capture IntelliTrace events and call information.
And then hit OK.
Click OK. Now, what it's warning you is it says, hey, if you're actually live debugging right now, you've got to stop and restart. The way these APIs work is they have to get in at the startup point in the process so they can inject in. Okay. And by the way, doing what we're doing with the live debugger, it's a live SharePoint environment, bad idea, right? Because you're going to hose anyone that's accessing that app pool. Okay. So this is definitely developer experience right here. All right. So now, go ahead and close that screen that's on there. I don't know how you end up in there.
So what am
stop.
I closing? Yep, hit stop. Okay.
Yeah, you need to stop. Now go ahead and close that. Control F4. Now, F5 again.
Coming right up.
Go back to the web page that we were at so we can see the error.
and then come back here.
Okay.
So right, we're doing that traditional thing that we've done, right? We've narrowed it down a bit. We know the general location where the problem occurs, but I want to know how we got there. And I don't want to sit there and press F11 1,000 times. Maybe IntelliTrace can help me out here.
So IntelliTrace basically turns it around and says, here are all the problems that potentially happened. Let's go in reverse as opposed to like you stepping through 17,000 lines of code to find where the problem is.
Exactly. So go to site pages. Now you notice it's a little slower. Right? They're collecting more data. In fact, by default, they'll collect up to 100 gigabyte log file.
Click on body.
And then now go back to Visual Studio. Hit that break all button just like you did before. So go to the IntelliTrace window. Break all. Now, just type in search for customer. Click on the exception. And now, zoom in over there in the gutter of the editor.
Oh, looking pretty good. We got
if you turn your head, those would kind of look like VCR buttons for fast-forwarding and rewinding, right? Back and forth. Right? So, Ben, why don't you go back to live mode and start clicking the up arrow? Let's go back.
This guy?
Yeah. Let's jump out of there. Who called us? Oh, it looks like there's a call to C.invoices.
That's weird.
And if you press the up arrow, not the out, but just up.
This guy?
Yep. Notice I can go up there, and notice if you zoom in on the autos window.
Come up just a second.
I can see the person's name.
So it's just like you're in that
it's
frame
just like
of the
that,
sacrifice.
Yeah, it's as if I was going forward, but instead I'm rewinding. This is TiVo letting me replay and go, did that really just happen? Did that really just happen? Now go back into live mode and jump out of this method. Who called us? And now we see it got called in that part of the web part. Right, this is simple. This is an A to B to C, but you know a lot of us work in where it's you know the alphabet soup of the number of calls in and out of different objects. I'm able to go back in time, just like I'm in a TARDIS, like I'm Doctor Who, and I can look at what was occurring at that point in time. I get to look at what's on the stack, what got pushed in, and what was being popped out. I can see return values, etc. Now, unfortunately, sometimes there's other data you want, so if you need to, you can set breakpoints, and wherever you have a breakpoint or trace point, it'll capture additional data. So it doesn't capture all possible data. It only captures data that's moved in and out of the stack. Okay? The point is, at this point, we know exactly how I got to that method that blew up, and we know where the source of the infection is. Now, at this point, it's going to tell me, hey, go ahead and click OK. It's upset because we've left the app pull paused too long, and so it's shut down. If you're going to do this a lot, on your debug machine, you just go and increase the app pull timeout to not time out or to not recycle after an hour. So let's go back to the slides.
Okay. PPT.
Personally, I think it was awesome.
Awesome.
What we did there is we went from the traditional inbound and came at a completely reverse way. Ben's going to show you some more things because, unfortunately, we will still get to production and need to use this tool. But I'll let you talk to them about some about user interface because earlier you just showed me this unit testing stuff, but...
It left you unsatisfied?
Well, because what about the GUI? How do you deal with that?
Yeah. Okay. So we've got those tests for the innards of the application, and we've got the stuff for debugging what was happening inside the application. But again, you got the user interface problem. All right. So a lot of times you probably are just like, testing the user interface is slow. You got to click through 7,000 different things. You got to click here, type something else, click again, check something, whatever. You do that a bunch of times per day when you're developing stuff. Well, now let's think about what happens in QA. How many of you think that QA people are actually people? So only a small handful.
Wow.
That is amazing.
That was not nice.
Right in the word QA people is the word people. That implies that they are actually people, and you should treat them with respect. So, as a software developer, is it really respectful of you to just like hand off any pile of dung that you write off to QA to say, here, I don't care.
This gives
does
me
it work?
To Farmville, huh?
It does.
Farmville development?
Kind of does. And the answer is probably not. You don't need your QA department to tell you your stuff is just broken. Now, the QA people are also going to be looking at a lot of stuff. So where you're testing one little part of the UI, they're responsible for regression testing hundreds of screens, maybe. That's a lot of tedium. So it's slow for them to do it. QA cycles are slow because they have to go through a lot of stuff. That's where coded UI tests come in. Coded UI tests are going to help you as a developer to eliminate some of the testing tedium against the UI, and it's really going to help out the QA people to manage their TDM problems. So, quick refresher, unit tests versus coded UI tests. So unit tests are really aimed at the API level. So we're looking at code, there's no user interface running, and if you do have a UI, you're testing an abstraction of the UI. So you heard of the MVC pattern or MVP or MVVM, those are all UI abstractions. So you would code against one of those in order to eliminate having to actually test against a real UI. But eventually, you do have to test the UI, and the TDM comes up hugely. So on the right-hand side, we've got coded UI test. That's actually going to maybe run a browser, or it's going to run a, if you're not doing SharePoint development, you'd be running an XE or whatever you got, and it's going to be simulating a user using the mouse, typing, and actually doing stuff and validating what shows up on the screen. So it's testing a running application. So, let's go to the next thing. Pretty much said that already. APIs versus user interfaces. And now I think it's time for a demo. Brian, hit me. So this is going to be fairly straightforward. So let's go and create a new project in this solution.
So add a project to the solution.
Yep.
What would you like me to add, sir?
Well, you're going to go into add
new
project. Then you're going to, why don't you zoom in on this guy for a second. So three different test project types. Coded UI test is what we're going to choose right now. We did in the fakes demo, that was the unit test project. And then we're going to wrap up the session with web performance and test project. So why don't you choose Coded UI?
Okay.
And then, yeah, just accept the default name and hit OK.
And there are moral equivalents if you do VB. You can do VB coded UI.
Okay.
Oh, what's this?
That's going to ask you to record some stuff.
Sweet.
Cool. Yeah.
So you want the default?
I think we're going to hit cancel right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right, fine.
So I wasn't really prepped for this. I didn't.
Okay, fine.
Go to IE, and let's bring up the SharePoint site that we had before.
Our tour de force.
Yep.
All
right.
It's a beauty.
Copy that URL into the clipboard.
Got it.
Now close it on down. Now, when we created the project, the Coded UI project, it gives us a Coded UI test. So in this case, it's conveniently named Coded UI Test 1, which I think is incredibly descriptive. And we've got a Coded UI test method in there. And right now, it's empty. So if we right-click on the test method, generate code using the Coded UI test builder.
You want to use the builder.
That's the one that's going to bring up the recorder,
no, I just want
right?
to make sure. I'm just repeating.
We don't have an action recording.
That's fine.
Okay. Brian, you're creeping me out. I was like, what?
I'm just repeating for their benefit.
Okay. Okay, so it brings up this little builder thing, which I'm going to call the recorder because I call everything by the wrong name. All right, so why don't you zoom in on that guy while we're not recording. And it's got a handful of little buttons. So on the left is a button that's the record button. So we're not going to click that just a second, but that starts the recording that records us doing stuff. Then we've got a little bullseye thing, which we'll show you about later on. And then we've got the generate code button on the right. So why don't we hit record?
And by the way, this is a good chance to shut down email, IM, all that good stuff.
Yeah. So it's going to record everything. All right, now let's bring up IE and paste in that value. All right, now, why don't you hit generate code? And let's call it open the app. Very nice.
Oh,
it's ooh, generated yeah. a little code for us behind the scenes. Now let's resume recording. And let's fill this guy out. Let's fill it up with some kind of test values. Tom Slick. He's good.
Tom Slick.
Is that from a cartoon?
It's a cartoon. Really? Anybody watch Tom Slick when they were a kid?
Anyone else? You did? We got like one person that watched Tom Slick, dude.
Hey.
Okay.
It's okay.
I watched G.I. Joe and Transformers and I don't know.
Do you have a valid corp ID you want to use?
Yeah. Let's do A123456.
Why does this keep losing focus?
It's because it's
SharePoint.
You're hitting the trackpad.
Oh, it's my belly.
Damn, I just figured it was your palm.
It was.
All right. One more character. That was pretty good. Hey, at least you made fun of yourself. Okay, so I'm gonna click a date on there too. Let's generate code, and we'll say, we'll call it populate the form. Now, you're recording this stuff one time. It's going to turn into C-sharp code. You can edit the C-sharp code later on. Resume recording, hit validate corp ID, and then generate code. All right.
What would you like me to call it?
Oh, let's call it validate corp ID. And now I think it's time for us to do the bullseye. What do you think?
I think it would be.
All right. So, right where it says, it's good. So, we click on the little, here, maybe you should talk it out as you drag.
You want me to?
Yeah, I want you to grab that, it's good.
Ooh, and I'm going to go in there and I'm going to highlight just it's good. And what we're going to see in this window here is that one found it in the HTML.
All right, so go down to where it says inner text. So that's what it's looking for. Use that bullseye control, the bullseye locator dealy. Drag it onto something you're going to want to validate on the screen. Drop it over that. It locates the control, and it shows you all the values that are available on that control. So in this case, we want to look at the inner text. So we're going to look at inner text and say add assertion. And let's say it wasn't good. So we're
So to be clear, what we're basically doing is giving our test eyes. Right? When a human runs a test manually, they're able to discern something's good or bad because they look at it. Right, a test, we have to provide a condition. You have to assert true or false. This is basically fine. What do we want to look at on the screen? Narrow down the focus, and now let's translate that into some kind of validation.
Cool. And then hit OK.
Oh, you wanted it wasn't
it
good.
Wasn't good. Or it wasn't. It's fine.
Okay.
All right. Now generate code. And let's call this assert was good. And then add and generate. And then let's resume recording. Hit submit. Generate code again, call it submit. And then we're going to do one more, which is close the app.
Oh.
So I like to record the individual methods for me opening the application and also for closing the application, just to make sure that I don't have any generated code getting in weird places. It's going to cause me problems later on. So it's just a little bit about keeping stuff clean.
All right, we're done.
All right, did you record closing the app?
I did.
All right, so let's exit the recorder. And now all the stuff we did goes into that test method. Let's just zoom it in a little bit.
Oops, hold on. We got the hover and the white. There we go.
Maybe that happens. All right, so all the things that we recorded go into these methods. Kind of actually fun and cool. So now let's just go run the test and then you will lift your arms away from the screen. This is a moment of truth, kids.
Dun 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 dun.
Do not error. Do not error. Brian's a great dancer. He was on Broadway for almost 15 years. Dude's got moves. Wow.
Batman dancing.
That sounds like something someone should
tweet. Oh, look, it's typing!
Wow, it's like magic. That's evil! Ah.
Oh, wait. Oh, look, and it's correcting.
So exactly what Brian was doing as he was being slow. It's going through and doing this. Now, it's doing this, and it's going at Brian's speed. But now imagine if you could do this, like, you have this test, you want to check in your code, and you're like, but I also want a cup of coffee. Run test. Walk away, get your cup of coffee, and if it works, it's going to go look for that it's good thing on the validate after the validate is successful. And when you come back from coffee, it's
Sad
going to actually
trombone.
Work. Wah, wah. Mm. Okay, sometimes it's a little unfun. But we're running out of time, unless you have any bright ideas.
Nope. That could have been my hitting the trackpad messed it up. I don't know.
All right. How about we pretend that worked and we move on?
Yay!
All right.
Sometimes this happens.
So sometimes there are little things that will go annoying. Should we just try it one more time just to see if it works?
Yeah, we can do it one more time.
How are we doing on time? We're good.
We're not doing good, but that's okay.
Okay. Show of hands, how many of you think we should just bail out and go to the next one? You guys got it? All right. So if this doesn't work, we'll just move on.
Just give it a second.
Okay.
But I think it was that part. I think it's in populate form is messed up.
Okay.
And there it goes.
Now what would be really fun is if I could say exactly the same thing that I said before when I was running it as part of the test.
Now I'll do Tom.
Yeah, so you can adjust the timer for the delays on stuff too, so that it's a little faster.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, that worked really well. Can I get a round of applause for that awesome demo?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Thank you. Next up, Wicked.
Yeah, that was.
All right, Wicked fail. But what if your application is slow? So we just did the Codage UI test thing. That's getting rid of some of the tedium of testing the application. Now imagine that Codage UI test worked, and then you had a whole like hundreds of them. So a whole bunch of different use cases are there. That's maybe something that the QA people would run before they do a, you know, bless a release. They run it, and now they can go get cups of coffee as well as you. So what if your application is actually, well, a little bit on the slow side? So let's say that your boss is saying, our company is toast if our SharePoint application is slow. Might be true, might be a lie. Load testing is something that you would probably care about at that point. So purpose of load testing, identify the capabilities of your application, or maybe your SharePoint hardware. So four different goals, explore the possibilities. So just run load test against your application and let's just see how it does. Okay? You don't really know. You don't really have just any particular goals in mind. You just sort of want to find out what's going on. Then you got verify. So maybe you have a contract that requires that stuff actually is supposed to work and you're supposed to be able to support, say, 5,000 simultaneous users. You got to verify that before you ship your application out or you might get sued. Right? That's another thing that load test could do for you. Sometimes you want to find the limits, like, all right, how many users can we take before it falls over? Maybe it's 8,000. So just keep adding users, and when does it fall over? So that's finding the limits. And then finally, there's crush the application. So you just throw more than you know it can take. You, like, double load. If you know it can take 8,000, send 16,000 simultaneous users. And then you want to verify, okay, does it fail gracefully, or does it start serving up everyone's credit card numbers, clear text, and give like a remote desktop window logged in as administrator on your domain controller or something like that. You want to check to make sure it fails gracefully, and that's where crushing comes in handy. Now, because we are ALM MVPs and we tell people to eat your vegetables, we've got to say this. This just has to be said. You should load test early. As soon as possible, start doing load tests and capture that data. Now, the reason why is you're going to be able to establish a baseline of your performance for your application. And if it performs well, you're good. If it starts to slow down in performance, you know, well, something has gone wrong recently, and you're going to fix that. So you're going to watch for performance trends, hopefully catch the problems early, and fix them early. And a good important point is if you don't plan for performance, you aren't going to get performance. So you've probably seen graphs like this, right, Brian? You've seen this. It's a lot cheaper to fix stuff early. So if you load test early, if you find your problems early, it's a lot cheaper. The later you get in your development cycle, the worse it, the more expensive it gets to make that fix. So you want to catch it early. Sound good?
Yeah. Made up info.
No, made up info.
Made up. Oh,
yeah.
See.
Okay. All right.
So to be clear, that chart is the often quoted Bohm study in the IEEE paper from about 1992. And the problem is it's been re-quoted in the early 2000s. It's a standard assumption that things fail. So whether it's, you know, it's a made-up graph or not, that's what they're finding from studies. And we know from experience it is. That's why.
Yep. Okay. So dose of reality, I bet most of you do not unit test. I mean, don't unit test. I bet you don't unit test either. But I bet you really don't load test from the beginning, right? Well, you should. And, well, okay, you don't. So if you have problems in your application, you need to figure out what's going wrong, and that's where load tests and web tests come in handy. So this is part of VS 2012 Ultimate. So you get a different project type called the Web Performance and Load Test Project. So if you go to create a new project and it's not there, you got problems. It means you don't own Ultimate. Everyone wants Ultimate, right? It's the Ultimate. And a web performance test is the building block of a load test. And what it does is you record what you're doing against a web application, and it records the HTTP requests so that you can play them back later on. So when you play them back later on, it's going to be doing a simulated user against your application. So web performance tests turn into load tests. So load tests are made up of one or many web performance tests and unit tests. So you can throw a unit test in there too if you want. And that load test is going to simulate a lot of users all at one time. Two ways to run load tests. You can either do it directly out of Visual Studio 2012, so generate it all off of your machine, or you can use it on a load test rig. So a load test rig is going to use a number of different servers, and it's going to generate a lot of load. Okay? I'm going to skip this slide. And let's go into a demo. All right, so let's close down.
Well, I just want to point out, I did get it to work.
Okay.
At the end, if we have time, I'll rerun it for you to prove it. But the key point, I just went and fixed populate form. Because it's editable code, there were just some pieces in here that had gotten duplicated. I just cleaned up the ones so that only the ones were there. So I fixed my belly problem, and it all works. Okay.
I was going to say something. You look trim.
Thank you. I've lost 10 pounds.
Really?
Yeah, seriously.
You lost 10 pounds.
Hey. So moving right on. Thank you.
All right. So close Visual Studio. Let's open up.
Close Visual Studio.
Or we can whatever.
Tell me what to do.
Go to Explorer. Go to SharePoint stuff. And then SharePoint load test before. Or should we do after because we're running out of time. Let's go to after.
Which one?
Open the solution. Okay. So the second from the bottom.
Yeah, you need file extensions on, brother.
I don't know. I didn't want to mess with the demo machine. It's Brian Keller's machine.
Hey, bite your tongue. All right.
I didn't say it was bad. You did. Brian has single-handedly alienated his relationship with Microsoft. Okay, so let's bring up Solution Explorer. And, well, one of the things we've done here is we've recorded ourselves already going through and creating a web test. So should we record one just to do it, or should we just play it back?
We should just play it back.
All right, so double-click on createAppointment.webTest. So earlier, I went through and recorded myself using my little appointment web part, and it recorded and gave it to me as these steps.
Right, to be clear, the difference between what I did earlier with coded UI, which was recording UI actions, it was recording things at a protocol level. It was recording the HTTP calls back and forth between the web browser and SharePoint. So that's the distinction there. He did it the same way I did, except he didn't have the little recorder in the bottom corner. He had a recorder built into the browser.
All right, so let's zoom out and then run this test. That guy right there. Okay. So this is going to play back what we did in the recording against the live SharePoint site, this time a lot faster. So as we go through, we see that it's populating various values. Now, let's go to the validate corp ID thing right there. Go to that one.
That one?
One more up.
That one.
Now, you can see that we have the, why don't you zoom in on the bottom half and then show them that it says it's good. So in our web test, we're looking, in this case, this is different from the coded UI test, we're looking for the it's good. So zoom out. Now, let's hop back over into the web test, create appointment web test, go to that same step.
That one right there.
Down two.
Down two?
Yep. Now expand it.
Don't know what I clicked. Here, sorry.
Maybe I should just drive real fast. Brian's breaking my box.
Oh, I pressed F1.
Oh, okay.
Help me.
Two hours later. So one of the things that we were doing in that step, so we click on the validate button, and then after you hit validate, it should say it's good. So we've added a validation rule right here, and if we look at the details of the validation rule, properties, we see that we've got a test in here that is looking for text inside of the result, so inside the HTTP response, looking for the string, it's good. If it passes, if it finds it, it passes. If it doesn't, it fails. And then also, as we go along, there are some custom things from Microsoft that are going to be looking for that correlation ID error message thing. Okay? So out of the box web test stuff. It's looking to see, is it an HTTP 200 return code? Now, when SharePoint bombs, it always gives you an HTTP 200 HTTP return code, even if it was broken. Thumbs down, right? So in this one, baked into the product, it's looking for that, and it looks for that correlation ID. If it finds it, it's going to bail out. Now, should we look at the load test?
Yes.
Okay. So why don't you go back to Solution Explorer? Man, you broke it pretty good, didn't you, dude?
Okay.
All right, double click on load test. So in here, why don't you zoom in on that mix? So in there, we've got a handful of different things. We've got something called a test mix. And that test mix is a mix of web tests that we've already created. So there's one that'll download a document. There's one that'll upload a document. There's one which is creating appointments using a data source. So it'll generate a lot of appointments really fast. And then we've got that one at the top that says delete appointments. And it's got that little initialized word right in front of it. So I've set up this test mix so that the first time that a simulated user comes and hits the site, it's going to make sure that list of appointments is empty. Okay? Then, after that's finished, then it runs and it starts doing this test. So if we go down a little bit further, if we go to run settings, so on run settings, if we look at the properties for that, that's going to show us that it's going to run for 1 minute and it's going to generate a whole bunch of different users. Click down one, right click, properties.
I don't know why this disappeared.
Yeah. So let's scroll down a little bit. So these are the various settings. So down below, we've got different things like run duration. So under timing, you've got cooldown duration, run duration. So this test is going to run for 1 minute. You might run your load test for a whole day just to see what happens to make sure it works. So let's go ahead and run this load test. Click that guy. So it's going to run for 1 minute. And then it's going to show us a bunch of data afterwards. Now the data that's going to, why don't you double click on in progress?
Live graphs?
Yep.
Ooh.
It's got some fancy live graphs. So one of the things that it's doing is it's going off and talking to the machines that are in, as part of this test. So Brian was talking about an enterprise SharePoint architecture where you've got two app servers, a database server, and a search server. If you have this on your load test, you're going to look for perfmon counters on all four of those machines. So when you start the load test, it's going to talk to all those machines and start capturing perfmon counters that then get graphed up on this graph. So you can start looking at what the throughput is, what the timing is, how fast things are going, and you can start finding problems that might be showing up by looking at those perfmon counters that are being captured automatically out of Windows.
So the bottom line is this is going to run for a minute. So why don't we leave this running?
Yeah, let's bop over to your stuff.
And I'm going to jump over for 2 seconds to the slides because this is going to hammer it home. Nice. We're almost done, really. Remember earlier we showed you IntelliTrace? Wouldn't it be cool if you could use it on production sites? Particularly what happens is you've deployed a web part. You've deployed a custom feature. It's working fine. And then you guys push out an update. And all of a sudden, things start breaking. And you're like, what do we do? I don't know, but we got to find out fast. Wouldn't it be great if you could gather data just like we did from Visual Studio, but gather from a production site? You can. The way it works is Microsoft provides a free collector. Anybody can collect from any server. There's no extra licensing today. What happens is you collect these logs from your servers, give those logs to developers who have Visual Studio Ultimate, and you can open up the log and do the historical debugging just like we did earlier. So let me show you how we do that. Now, what's going to happen here in this implementation is that I have the web part just like before, but what I did was I changed it so the first part just says hello world. That was the first version I shipped. Now I just pushed an update up there. That same code you saw from earlier, except I forgot to wrap it in a try-catch. Okay? And we know what happens when an exception blows a stack in SharePoint, right? You end up with a correlation ID. So I've already redeployed it, but before I try and run it, I'm going to start the IntelliTrace collector. What this is going to do is it's going to reach up and attach itself to my app pool. And there's a command line in here. And you can download this exact sample and take a look at it. And what it does is it says, I'm going to start monitoring. Now, FYI, it does reset the app pool. So you do this kind of off hours or, you know, you let people know, do it to part of the farm, whatever. I'm now monitoring it. So I'm going to go back to the website.
and I'm going to refresh the page. Now, when I do, it's going to take just a little longer. And basically, Microsoft's done some timing, and you can look at basically anywhere from a 5% to a 50% performance hit when IntelliTrace is running, right? So we don't run this all the time, right? There is a negative performance hit. But it is going to give us some rich data. Now, just like before, that command line I run, I can basically pass a plan. One plan says do events. The other one says take it to 11 and do events and methods. I'm doing events and methods. So like any good user, I've been trained to capture that correlation ID. So I'm going to grab that. Then I'm going to go over here and turn off the collector. Once I turn off the collector, it has, through the configuration, saved out a log file. Now, these log files can get big. So just for that short duration, whoops, wrong folder, log location, you'll see I have a log file there that is about 64
megs.
Megs, and zoom it, got reset, sorry. Right. So you see there's this log file there. Now, here's the cool thing about this. I'm going to double-click on this, and it's going to load it into Visual Studio.
That is pretty sweet.
And notice what it's asking for. Hey, you want to give me a correlation ID? I do. I'm going to paste it in. And when I click View Details, it's going to go and show me information about the web request that came in, match the correlation ID, and then it's going to match that up to the call stack, to the stack frame. Now, you notice there also was a combo box that I could have picked from also. So if you don't know one, you can just start going through the list. But I knew exactly what it was, so I went straight to that correlation ID, but here's where the money comes in. Notice this Start Debugging button, okay? I'm going to come over here, and I'm going to click Start Debugging. Now, I'm going to get this, and I'm going to go, well, okay, this is in our customer stuff, so I'm going to come over here, and then I come down here, and I see the SharePoint ULS log, and then I start seeing things like these different categories and errors, and I'm thinking, well, what about customer? Oh, there is no data for this customer. Oh, money. And notice the VCR buttons just like when I had Visual Studio attached. Right, look at the title bar. I'm doing historical debugging. I'm doing IntelliTrace debugging.
This could have happened a couple days ago, right?
Exactly. That log file could have been done over the weekend for me and given to me on my desk. And I'm able to go back in time, just like Ben did earlier in the debugger, and see what data happened all the way up to the top of the stack. All right? So you get that same experience that you had with Visual Studio, but I got it from a production log file. How much is that worth? How much pain and suffering can you save by being able to go to the root of the infection instead of taking that correlation ID, going to the ULS log in Excel, and now just popping that into Visual Studio and saying, go find out where it occurred.
Especially for stuff that doesn't happen all that often. Like, man, exactly. What if the problem only shows up like once every 3.5 years or whatever? Oh,
now,
that's really nice.
We've still got 1 minute and 41 seconds, so let me go back to your demo just to show that the load test did finish.
Woo-hoo!
And there is an amazing amount of data. Do you want to tell them anything about this?
We got a lot of stuff in here. So let's go in. Let's look at the graphs. The graphs are always kind of hot. And if you go and look at the computers that are happening, so it's capturing a whole lot.
The counters, not computers.
So in the computers, it's capturing perfmon counters on a per computer basis that you can come in here. So if you think that perhaps there's something wrong with, let's look at memory. Let's double click on that. Let's add it to the graph. Memory looks okay. Let's look at network. Start adding stuff to the graph. Now, you don't know where the problem is, but you've got all that data already captured. So you can go and do historical debugging on those servers under load, and it saves you a lot of pain.
Right, and that's the thing, right? We did basically developer F5 and we did production. You also have this middle road, which you can use a test environment and run load test with IntelliTrace turned on through the collectors. Your testers also can run, if they use Microsoft Test Manager, can have IntelliTrace running as they do their manual tests, where they're sitting there just pressing things off a script and they can send you the logs also. So in summary.
Good stuff. All right, in summary, unit testing, fakes framework. So remember, we're helping to break that dependency on SharePoint, make it a little bit easier, reduce test friction.
IntelliTrace, right? Be able to go back in time and see what happened, because basically F11 starts to suck.
Coded UI for making sure that your QA people are treated as actual people and to get rid of tedium. Load testing to find out if your application can take some serious load or not, and if your hardware can take some load. And then that's it. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you. www.benday.com and www.mcwtech.
If you have questions, you can go to the mic, but we got to tear it down. We're going to go to the booth if you want to follow us, talk to us. You have our email addresses. Slides are up on CorpNet. Please do your evals, and thanks, and have a great rest of the week.
Thanks.